This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to talk about the world of make-believe and what's the point of it? What's the game with all this? Tom Holman is taking over things. Big things happening in the Supreme Court. What a show tonight on I'm Right. All right. So we've talked before many times about the world of make-believe that communists live in. That they live entirely in a world that is not real. You really have to think about Democrats now as insane. I'm really not genuinely being mean. They're people who believe things, and they believe it all the way, things that are just not true. How many Democrats do you know, relatives, co-workers, who believe Donald Trump told them to inject themselves with bleach during COVID? How many do you know? How many relatives, Democrats, are in your life who think Donald Trump called Nazis very fine people? They believe it, and they believe it all the way, don't they? Now, keep in mind, those two particular instances, they're on video. Your Democrat, the liberal Aunt Peggy in your life, could pick up a phone right now and watch the video of what he actually said. Take 5 seconds, depending on your internet connection. Yet, legions and legions of people believe that. A world of make-believe. But why build it? What's the actual point of it? Because people don't want to be known as liars, right? Okay. Well, you ever play the game Hungry, Hungry Hippos? Or at least you've seen the game, I assume. Let me go ahead and dumb this down in case maybe you're a little bit younger. I don't even know if the game exists anymore. Everyone from my generation knows what I'm talking about. Hungry, Hungry Hippos. What was it? All right, so there's this round board. It's a flat board, right? And there's these hippos lined up around the outside of it. And you have a little lever, and you press the lever down. And what happens when you press the lever down is your hippo opens up his mouth, and he reaches out, and he tries to grab all these balls that are on that round board. The idea, of course, you probably already figured it out. The general idea of the game is you want to grab as many balls as possible and bring them over to your side. That's how you win the game, right? All right, so I want you to think about society as, well, all the people in society as the balls on that platform of Hungry, Hungry Hippos. And the idea for the communists is simply this. It's not truth or facts or anything. Those things are completely out of their minds. They don't care about that. This is all about the revolution. The idea is to grab as many of those people as they possibly can and bring them in. And once they bring them in, if they can bring them in, oftentimes they never get back out. If you can reach out and grab that person, grab them with the lie you tell and bring them in, well, if the truth comes out a couple days later, month later, it's too late. The ball has already been taken in. It's over. It's too late. Communists understand that's how the human mind works. We're all kind of built that way. When we hear something or see something and we believe it to be true, we don't want to change our minds. We oftentimes will not change our minds. Several recent examples of this come to mind. Remember, obviously, the horrible, horrible assassination of Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk was murdered by some guy. Now, keep in mind, we have the text messages. We have the exchanges now. His whatever tranny, furry boyfriend. This is a textbook left winger. We have the testimony from his family saying he went left wing. It's a left winger who killed Charlie Kirk because Charlie Kirk was a leader on the right. This is known. It's factual. Family, friends, it's factual now. Remember when Jimmy Kimmel came out right afterwards and said this?
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
What? No. Why would he say that? Surely he's sorry. Surely well, Jimmy Kimmel's playing Hungry Hungry Hippos with your mind. No, he's not going to get you. I'm not worried about you, but he got someone in your family, didn't he? He got somebody you work with, didn't he? You know somebody who thinks Charlie Kirk was killed by a right-winger, don't you? And that was the idea. And this is why I tell you that communists lie about everything all the time. It's like breathing for them. It's just, they understand that's part of their religion. It is a built-in part of their religion. You lie about everything all the time in order to win the Hungry Hungry Hippos game. Speaking of hippos, here is Tiffany Cross on CNN.
Charlie Kirk was murdered, the president.
Not by a left-wing extremist. But that person espoused very right-wing extremists.
What? What'd she just say? What? Whether, maybe she believes it. I mean, she's stupid, so maybe she believes it. Maybe she doesn't, but Tiffany Cross hasn't stopped playing the game of Hungry Hungry Hippos because she knows your liberal Aunt Peggy needs that constant reinforcement in her mind of the lie. Now, the most recent communist street animal who got himself killed in Minneapolis, Alex Preti. This is a guy, again, this is not me guessing on things now. I don't even have to do that allegedly thing. We know he was part of these communist street animal groups. We know that he had already had several confrontations with law enforcement. These are things we know. We have video. We have. This is your textbook mentally ill, violent communist street animal out there in the streets every chance he gets. That's what we know. We know this is the type of person, no matter who you are, maybe even if you're hate watching the show, this is the type of person you don't want to have dinner with him. If you have a daughter, you certainly wouldn't want her to date him. You wouldn't want him to live next to you. You wouldn't want to work with him. You don't want to be around somebody like this who's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. You know that. We know this. This is how they're talking about him.
They chose to, they killed the wrong guy, right? Because this is like the perfect guy. Alex Preti is the guy you would want to date your daughter. The guy you would want your son to grow up to be a decent human being who was serving humanity, serving sick veterans who is, there is nothing that has been said about that man that isn't wonderful. And so they can't malign him. They can't malign him because we have the videos.
Just a big lie. How could she say that lie? How could she be so bold as to say that lie? We have videos like this.
Look at you! That's a straight
This is a moment the news movement filmed on January 13th in Minneapolis, showing a man who appears to be ready interacting with federal immigration agents 11 days before Border Patrol shot and killed him. Our footage was by the BBC, whose facial recognition technology confirmed his identity to a 97% degree of accuracy.
Yet she stood up. He was perfect in every way. How could you tell that lie? For her, it's not lying. She's playing Hungry Hungry Hippos. And no matter what, it didn't work on you, of course, but no matter what, she's been able to grab some of those balls and bring them in. She has. Credit to Maze Moore, who always does such funny stuff. Elizabeth Warren got up and talked about how wonderful he was, and Maze put it on that video.
Caring for people was at the core of who he was. He was incapable of causing harm. Alex carried patience, compassion, and calm as a steady light within him. Even at the very end, that light was there. I recognized his familiar stillness and signature calm composure.
Pretty good. Satire done pretty good. Senator Dick Durbin United States Senator from the state of Illinois, got up on the floor of the United States Senate and shared a picture showing these ICE agents executing him, except it was AI. It's an artificial intelligence picture. One of the officers in the picture doesn't even have a head. They just lie about everything all the time. They can't help themselves. It's part of the revolution. Here's one of the founders of Ben & Jerry's ice cream.
I was prepared to make a special ice cream today to memorialize and celebrate the life of Renee Good. But now that Alex's murder makes it clear that the murder of Renee and the government's lies were not a mistake, but standard operating procedure, I just don't have it within me. We all live in Minneapolis now, because Minneapolis is only the beginning of what they have in mind. They're coming for anyone, anywhere, who doesn't submit. A brazen, arrogant, masked, militarized force, loyal only to Trump and immune from prosecution. Submit or be murdered, video them and be murdered, protest and be murdered, or at least be placed on a list of domestic terrorists and investigated. This is not freedom. This is not the right to free speech or the right to protest. This is not America. This is sheer cruelty. This is the beginning of the end of the land of the free, unless we make it the home of the brave.
You can sit and scream all day long, but that's a lie. He's lying. He's playing hungry, hungry hippos. He's just trying to bring in as many as possible. And of course, that kind of rhetoric, the balls he brings in, they're fully radicalized. If you get enough of those mentally ill balls in your camp, it's not going to be hard to find somebody who's violent, mentally ill enough to go out and do something about it. They're practically begging everybody to go do something about it. Remember this guy, what's his name again? Giancarlo Esposito from Breaking Bad. Listen to this.
This is time for a revolution. It's time for it, and they don't even know that's what they're starting. You know, some very rich old white men are exerting their power to suppress our own people, thus creating a feeling of civil war in the streets, preparing the hate, the haters to hate, teaching them how to shoot. They're not even trained right to kill. This is all a preparation for a very insidious problem that's happening in our world. And for me, I have to speak out that we will not be iced out. This is not going to happen. They can't take us all down. If the whole world showed up on Putin's doorstep or on the Iranian's doorstep or in Washington, it would they'll kill 550 million, however, but the rest of us would survive with a new... This is time for a revolution.
Pretty brazen call for revolution. Of course, keep in mind, he's not going to show up. He wants your liberal Aunt Peggy to show up. She's sitting at home popping SSRIs out of a Pez dispenser. She's going to show up. Ah! She's going to show up and go die. He'll be sitting at home eating caviar, watching the masses die with that smug, stupid look on his smug, stupid face. They're playing hungry, hungry hippos, and that's why they lie. All that may have made you uncomfortable. But I am right. We have an incredible show. We're going to talk about sifting through things, discernment. Before we get to that, I want to talk about this cabal of big businesses. See, my family, my parents, about the time I joined the Marine Corps, they started a small business, a small construction business. So small business is near and dear to my heart. Well, here's the thing. The big, huge corporations, they kind of have this racket going with big, huge banks. So the capital from the big, huge banks, it's readily available for the big business, small businesses who need capital. My parents needed capital. Got to make payroll this week. Is that you? Got to be. Small businesses get frozen out. That's where Cardiff comes in. Cardiff is made for small businesses. We're talking $500,000 same-day financing. Small businesses. They're not interested in just dealing with the monster corporations in the world. They exist for businesses like the ones my parents ran. Want to find out what they can possibly do for you? Go to cardiff.co/Jesse. Cardiff.co/Jesse. We'll be back. Discernment, you know, we have to have it. It's a requirement, especially in this world of lies in which we live. And it can be very difficult, especially for Christian people, especially when there are some pastors who are leading people astray. Joining me now, Pastor Michael Clary, lead pastor at Christ the King Church out of Kentucky, wrote a book called God's Good Design. Pastor, it's understandable that people like me who sit in the pews could be led astray, but when it's the pastors leading them, it can get very, very frustrating, very scary. Why is this a problem in the country?
Well, you need to have pastors that can lead people. And people are usually not going to go somewhere difficult unless they're led there by somebody who has the courage to show the way. And that is something that is very common with a lot of pastors, is there are difficult things in this world. There are difficult challenges that we have to face. We have to speak hard truths. And people generally want to be comfortable. They want to be left alone. And so they need to have a solid leader who can help them deal with that discomfort while leading them into uncomfortable truths. And when you don't have that, you have a lot of chaos like we have in our world today in the church.
Pastor, can you talk about weaponized empathy? Because you talk about this, and you see it all over the place. It's something that pierces the heart of a lot of Christians. Well, I mean, I turn the other cheek, and we're supposed to be nice. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, weaponized empathy. I don't know who coined that term, but it's a term that really describes taking something that is often a virtue and turning it against the person that is meant to express it. And so empathy, or, you know, to use a more biblical word, you might say compassion, that's a good thing. It means that you care about people, you care about people that are suffering, and that's a good thing. But, you know, anytime you have something good, the greater the good, the greater its evil when it is distorted. And so that can happen a lot of times, where the good of compassion can just become untethered from reality. And whenever that happens, then people are feeling sorry for rapists and murderers and people that are committing fraud. They're here illegally. But because they feel sorry for them, they don't want them to experience pain or discomfort. That is weaponized compassion. And that's how you have good, nice people, nice church people, that will do harm by basically enabling evil to continue.
Pastor, gay marriage is one of these things that is part of America now that seemed to happen overnight. And there's a chance we may at least legally get rid of this whole bunch of garbage. But there are going to be a lot of Christians who are going to be attacked for that stance, and some will fall. Can you speak to them?
Yes. Gay marriage is an abomination. It is a great moral evil. And it's a fiction. It doesn't exist. There is no such thing as gay marriage. You might have two people that live together, that love each other, and that is a sin. That is a sin and affront against God. But then to take that and call it marriage, that is elevating to an institutional status something that is clearly evil. And so it needs to be overturned, because it is not merely something that two people do in their own privacy of their own homes, their own bedrooms. As we have seen, since Obergefell especially, we have seen just this, it's like hell opened up and belched out a demonic horde of wickedness that was ushered in by Obergefell. And whenever Christians, they think that they're being nice, they think that they're being non-judgmental, but that is gullible. They're being foolish by supporting something. Basically, it's an inversion of reality. God calls this wicked, and the thing that God calls wicked, they call it good, and then they bathe it in this language of love and compassion, and love is love, and we just want people to be happy and to be able to share life and to enjoy the benefits of family. The thing is that these gifts that God gave us came with certain restrictions. It's like we don't get to just invent reality. We don't just get to create what these fictions that we want just because we feel a certain way. And so I would tell Christians, it's like, what if you support this, if you support the fiction of gay marriage, then you are affirming evil, even though you feel good about it, even though you feel like it's love or compassionate, you are supporting evil. And at the very least, you need to not stand in the way of good men and women who are trying to overturn it and oppose it, because they are doing the difficult work that a lot of Christians just are unwilling to do.
Amen. Pastor, thank you. I appreciate you very much. It's so nice to hear pastors speak like that, isn't it? Sadly, it's not all that common anymore. It's nice to hear. Boldness can be hard to come by these days. Maybe it's not your pastor's fault. Maybe it's your T levels. Let's be honest. Testosterone is dropping in men. It's not your fault. It's in the water. There's estrogen in the water. We drink it. We shower in it. It's everywhere now. 1% a year. We lose 1% of our testosterone a year. They're tracking it. What do you do? Are you tired all the time? Feeling depressed all the time? Bad mood all the time? What do? You fix it naturally. You don't go get start jamming needles in your arm. You go to chuck.com/JesseTV and you get a male vitality stack. Ladies, you're not left out. If you're dragging at the end of the day, I need a nap, an extra cup of coffee. Chuck.com/JesseTV. Get a female vitality stack. It has been part of my life for 4 years. It has totally changed how I work, how I am at home. The difference is so palpable. You'll never stop. It's just one of the great blessings. Chuck.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Do we have any sense about this idea of birthright citizenship and if this is something the Supreme Court's finally going to be done with? Because this is so, we can't have a country like this. Please tell me they're going to address this situation.
I feel like, Jesse, I feel like you ask me this every few times that we get to talk. And every time I'm like, I would love to be able, like I said, to cover the auto pen challenge. I would love to be able to cover the birthright citizenship challenge.
I'm asking her again. I don't care. Joining me now, Alex Sawyer, editor-at-large, Washington Times. Alex, what's up with birthright citizenship? I need to get rid of this stuff.
Thank you so much for having me. And I think what I told you at the time was I would be surprised if the justices took on birthright citizenship, only because the lower courts have universally ruled against the president's administration on this. And usually it takes court splitting to prompt the justices to have to weigh in on an issue. So I thought that they would like to try to duck it. The fact that they've granted this gives me an idea that there's enough justices, okay? It usually takes four to vote in favor of hearing a case, and we don't get to know who those four are. It's all done in secret. But at least four right now wanted to revisit that lower court's ruling against the Trump administration on birthright citizenship. That suggests to me that there could be four votes, possibly with the administration in some manner. So we'll see what the Solicitor General does. If he's able to win over the majority, again, that would just be five justices in relation to the president's executive order banning birthright citizenship. This is such an issue, Jesse, that spans, I think, even more than we think. I was just at an event last week, and I was talking to a lawyer that's talking about legislation he's been pushing senators to get on board with that actually also deals with this birthright citizenship issue and foreign adversaries, individuals from like China buying American surrogates, using embryos here for their own possible purposes. We aren't really sure exactly what's going on. I know there was a Wall Street Journal story that had broke just a few months ago on this about a mansion out in California where some Chinese nationals were living. They said that it was a couple, I believe, from China. They had dozens of children all around the same age, nannies taking care of them. There was one that was injured that got the hospital and investigators involved. So, I mean, this whole birthright citizenship issue, I think it's bigger than what people are led to believe. It's huge. We're talking about even embryos. I'm excited to see what the justices do with it. There has been no argument date scheduled yet, but I know it'll be argued sometime before the end of May. And then we should expect a decision. I think I always tell you, usually we get our big ones at the end of June, sometimes early July.
All right. I won't ask you about it again until next time you come on. But I won't ask about it again. All right. Now, all right. What's going on with the tariff decision? And I ask this because every single day it feels like I wake up and the tariffs, they may rule on the tariffs. Today could be the day. Tariff this and they may rule against the tariffs, but there's still no ruling on the tariffs. Why? What's up?
I know. It's crazy. Everybody gets so excited whenever they announce an opinion day. And I feel like I get, my phone blows up. Everyone asks me, is today the day for opinions or for the tariff opinion? And I'm like, I have no idea. I know the administration wanted this fast, right? Because they want to know if they need to revisit their policy. What they say has been very successful. But, you know, no tariff opinion yet. What that tells me about the court is that I think we're going to have a lot of justices writing on this issue. Usually the slower it takes for an opinion to be released, it means the more justices are authoring either a concurrence with the majority opinion or a dissent. A concurrence would mean that they agree with it, maybe for different reasons than what the majority came up with. But either way, it tells me there's going to be a lot of opinions, a lot of split, maybe arguing back and forth. They have to circulate all those writings and review them. So that's kind of where I think there's a delay. When I was in the courtroom during the oral arguments, I took away and I revisited my reporting just before I joined you, that I thought the administration was up against a big hurdle here. You had even Justice Gorsuch, a Trump appointee to the court, pointing out that the president's argument that he had to implement these tariffs for emergency purposes, the fentanyl issue, the big trade deficit was emergencies that the president cited, that those types of reasons would lend possibly to a Democrat president saying that, oh, well, I'm going to implement tariffs on gas-powered cars because of climate change. Chief Justice Roberts mentioned that the word tariffs is not in the federal law that the president is citing for these emergency moves that he is making. And even Justice Barrett brought up how broad these tariffs are. So there's three Republican appointees to the court right there, skeptical of President Trump's administration's move and how they've tried to implement these tariffs across the board. Now, I think the administration has been working, my understanding is, behind the scenes, trying to come up with alternative ways to keep these tariffs in place. So we will have to see what happens. But the fact that we don't have a ruling yet in what was expected to be maybe one of the, a rushed opinion or a rushed decision so the administration knows how to move forward, tells me there must be a lot of disagreement.
What else do you have your eyes on? I know you're all over this stuff.
One of the big cases, I think, of the term that a lot of people are paying attention to was the transgender athlete arguments. Those just occurred. You have states like Idaho and West Virginia that have laws on the books banning, basically protecting women's sports, saying only biological females may be able to compete in women's sports. And that goes from elementary upward. So we're even talking, 6 years old and younger, right? And so when I was at the court for oral arguments on that, these transgender athletes have challenged those laws, saying they run afoul of Title IX, equal protection, that they should be included. I thought the justices were more on the side of these states. I think there's about 24 states that have similar laws, protecting women's sports, saying you must be born a biological female to compete. The transgender athletes' lawyers were almost pushing for some sort of scale about how much testosterone an athlete has, which prompted some of the justices to say, so is this on states to test every single athlete? Like, that's unworkable. So I left under the impression that the justices will end up upholding these laws that do really restrict transgender athletes from competing inside with them, the states being able to say, hey, you have to be born a biological female to be in women's sports. Imagine that.
What a friggin' world we live in. So old. All right. Fulton County, Georgia. FBI showed up yesterday, raided some stuff. I don't expect you to be an expert on it because we don't know exactly what they're looking for. But do you have some inkling as to what's going on there? What's the rumor mill saying?
It's So a couple of things. First of all, we know there was reporting about a few hundred thousand, I think it was like roughly 300,000 ballots that didn't have signatures on them or poll observers, something to that effect. I'd have to look at the details. And I'd also have to look at what's required in Georgia with election observers and mail-in balloting. You know, of course, that's one of these things that each state gets to set their own laws, which can also be confusing, which, you know, has there's mail-in ballot challenges before the Supreme Court, which we can talk about as well. But my guess here is that because there's been such an issue that the Justice Department has some sort of evidence on this warrant that they say about criminal activity is my understanding. So the fact that they've sued Fulton County over this, they must have something that they're pursuing, something they want to find. My understanding is that there is a ongoing across the board look by the Trump administration into the 2020 election, as well as the weaponization of the, I guess you could call it the Justice Department under President Joe Biden. I know we've talked a lot about lawfare, you and I. So there's some areas going into that. I don't know if those overlap or if they're kept separate, but you do recall it was Fulton County that had we love to talk about the district attorney, Fonnie Willis, and her lawsuit against President Trump. During the investigation into what Fonnie Willis was doing, basically with hiring her boyfriend as the special counsel who was pursuing, and the special prosecutor who was pursuing charges against the president and I think 17 other defendants, that Nathan Wade told lawmakers here in DC, you know, he billed for meeting at the Biden White House, the White House counsel. I don't know, there's no reason in my mind, aside from maybe a national security reason, for a local district attorney or a special prosecutor in this sense to need to go to the White House for a meeting with the White House counsel's office. So I'm wondering if there's anything there that they're also pursuing in this Fulton County litigation. I haven't reviewed any of the court records, but I'd love to explore. It's something I found complete. Fulton County seems to be quite a mess from, you know, 2020 onward, 2024. It's just a lot you can take up there.
Yeah, maybe he was there because he was an insider. Alex, thank you so much. I appreciate it very much. All right, Tom Homan did a presser today. The coach, Senator Tommy Tuberville, joins us in a moment. Before we get to the coach, you ever get heartburn? Your gut ever bother you? Now, I'll just tell you, mine never used to. I used to be able to eat nails, although I've never actually had nails, but I could eat anything. And that started to change as I got a little bit older. It started to, every now and then, you go to sleep. If you eat too close to sleep, it gets heartburn. It's getting old, right? Look at me, I'm gray now, getting old. So talking to my sister about it last summer, she says, well, you need to try this. I've been taking this stuff. I said, what? Cowboy colostrum. I didn't even know what colostrum was. I started making fun of her. She said, trust me, just try it. Try it. Okay. I started putting a couple scoops of it in my coffee every morning. I haven't had a problem since. Nothing. Not heartburn one time. Never that way. Feeling. Not one time. So good for you. Try it. By the way, it's delicious. It's not like it's some burden. You'll prefer it. CowboyColostrum.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
I'm also pleased to announce I had a very good meeting with Attorney General Ellison, and he has clarified for me that county jails may notify ICE of the release dates of criminal public safety risks so ICE can take custody of them upon the release from the jail.
Okay, that sounds good. I'm extremely suspicious that communists like Ellison would do such a thing. I want to know what's actually going on here. So let's talk to the coach about it. Joining me now, Coach Tommy Tuberville, United States Senator from Alabama. He's going to be governor in Alabama, which will be cool. I'm going to have to go over there to Orange Beach when he gets to be governor. Coach, okay, Keith Ellison is not exactly somebody I would expect to cave on being a dirty commie. What's actually going on?
Well, they all speak out of both sides of their mouth. We've seen that with President Trump talking to the governor and the mayor and Keith Ellison, and that Tom Homan's in there. We can't trust them. We just need to keep them at arm's length and make sure they go by the rule of law and do what they say they're going to do. And if they don't, we call them out. They tend to get a little bit ruffled. They ruffle their feathers when we call them out, when we catch them in lies, and we catch them quite often. So Tom Homan's in a tough spot up there. He's having to do a very tough job. These people have no self-responsibility whatsoever up there. They're stealing us blind. And somebody has got to help Tom Homan for us to be able to get this done, because, you know, our federal officials can't do it by themselves.
Coach, what's the scuttlebutt in D.C. about how deportations are landing with the American public? I know you talk about it. It's a bubble there. It's most definitely a bubble. So it's hard to sometimes get a handle on what the public is feeling. Is the administration worried? Are they pleased? How's this going?
Well, I would hope they wouldn't be looking at some of this crazy polling. I think at the end of the day, we go back to the election. You know as well as I do, President Trump has run and won both times, building the wall the first time around in 2016, and now in 2024 of sending people home that Joe Biden and all these communists allowed to come into this country. It's cost us $200 billion a year to keep them here. The crime has just skyrocketed, but he's got it stopped now. President Trump's done a great job at the border, and now we just got to get people out of here. We cannot let people put pressure on us and get soft and start saying, oh, you know, let's quit this deportation. We can't do that. We can't afford it. We can't afford it from the law enforcement side. We can't afford it for the financial side. It is going to break this country if we continue to allow these people to stay on the welfare state.
Tom Homan talked about the funders, the organizers of these communist protests. Here he was.
Well, first of all, about the organization and the funding of the attacks on ICE. I'm not going to answer a lot about that because I'm not going to show our hand, but they'll be held accountable. Justice is coming.
Coach, whenever we talk about people funding and organizing this, people always ask who would even be motivated to do this? Who's writing these checks so these street animals can go out and make nuisances of themselves?
Yeah, the Marxists. I mean, this has been a plan all along. It's to infiltrate our country as much as they possibly can with illegals, to take over our voting, to take over our streets, to get people in elections. We have a lot of people here that probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for cheating on the census in terms of congressional seats. As I go back and say what I said earlier, Tom Homan's got a tough job because he's getting hit from every direction. But if we can find out who is funding this, they need to pay the price. They need to be locked up, and we need to bankrupt them, because what they're trying to do is bankrupt this country and take this country another direction, and we're not going to allow that to happen. The culture of our country is being attacked, and we need to make sure on every avenue that we protect the culture and we protect the people and the taxpayers of this country and stop this nonsense of funding number one and then stealing us blind number two. We want our money back. You know, what could we do in Alabama with $20 billion? It would be unbelievable how we could just turn around a lot of our economy and a lot of our hospitals and education. But when we're funding these people that came here from Somalia, the Somali pirates, and they're stealing this kind of money, we have to stop it, and we have to stop it now. We can't continue to allow this to happen.
Yeah, $20 billion buys a lot of bananas and rice. Coach, first of all, we have to pause for a moment. As an Ohio-born Ohio State fan, can you explain to me how Indiana wins the national championship in college football? That's not a thing that I don't think I would ever even dream that I would say those words, that Indiana's the national champion. How does that happen?
Well, it happens when you're allowed to pay players. And again, it's legal. And Indiana did a very good job. That coach is a very good coach. I've known him. He's put a team together. And he was able to keep most of his players on the team for several years. The problem that we're having is transferring kids every year. You have some kids that have transferred five, six. Now we have a kid this year that wants a seventh year and transfer and play for another team for 7 years. So we've gotten away from education, okay? Education is out the door. I'm all for players making money, but this transferring every time they can get another $5,000 is absolutely ridiculous. But I'm proud of Indiana. I watched them, went over to Atlanta and watched them play against Oregon. It was a total takeover of a very good football team in Oregon. They set the tone very, very early, but well coached, well played, and they didn't make mistakes. And that's what I would, that's the type of football team that I really want, enjoy watching.
Could you coach under this kind of a system, or would it just be too much for you? I know you walked away years ago to go and save the country, but could you coach under this system?
Since I grew up in a different system of 25 or 30 years and coaching a team that when you went out and you signed 25 players and you were hope at the end of the 4 or 5 years that those kids were on your team, that you developed them into a man, their physique really changed, you had them on track to get a very, very good education, and plus it was team camaraderie. You learned to work with other people. You didn't learn an excuse of, say, I don't like this coach, I'm going to transfer somewhere else. You put up with it. Players learn from it, coaches learn from it, and it was a building process. There's no building to it anymore. It's going out at the end of the year. There's some teams I know right now that have lost 50 or 60 players in the transfer portal, and next year the fans that pay all the money will not know one name on the team that will play next year. It's just again, it's the system that the NCAA allowed to happen. We've all allowed this to happen. I don't mind the money part. I would just love to see an opportunity to say, listen, okay, you get one transfer. That's it. We're going to put education back into this. And so, you know, just don't go out there and look to transfer at any time, because once you use that one, or you might never use it, you get an education at the end of the day. That is what this is supposed to be all about. But education is out the door as we speak with this new sense of non-reality.
All right, Coach, speaking of spending, what's going on with funding the government? Not that I'm particularly interested in such a thing, but I understand there's problems with DHS funding and whatnot. What's the latest on this?
Well, we've been, for the first time since I've been here in 5 years, we've actually put appropriation bills, which there's 12 of them, and you put them on the floor of the Senate and House first, and then if they pass the House, you put it in the Senate and you pass that. And, you know, it's MILCON, it's veterans, it's military, it's commerce, it's all kind of bills that actually is the budget that we spend. And so we're halfway through, and we've got three on the floor now as we speak. We voted it down today. I actually didn't vote for it, and I'll tell you why in just a second. But it the Democrats were never going to pass this because they hate President Trump. They don't like law enforcement. They're against any kind of responsibility. They want the power back. Said, okay, we're not going to fund DHS. Hey, Chuck, by the way, Schumer, DHS has already been appropriated through the big, beautiful bill. So what they're going to do is, if they don't pass this bill that we have now, it's going to defund the military. They won't get a check. They're going to defund the Coast Guard. It's going to defund the TSA. And Homeland Security is going down the road because we've already funded them. So they're playing games, but there's also a lot of nonsense in this spending package. We're funding a lot of the DOGE stuff that was supposed to be taken out. Democrats are spending on earmarks $500 million for one senator got for some ungodly reason. It's bloated. And again, President Trump ran on cutting back. I understand we all need a bill. We need this budget to pass so we don't shut down the government. But we better really be careful here of the money we're spending, because it is going to put us under at the end of the day. A dollar is not going to be worth 25 cents if we don't watch it.
Coach, why do we still have Republicans? I understand why Democrats do it. There's no saving them. But why do we still have Republicans who do this stuff too? Sign on for, they want all this waste, all this stuff. The normal person looks at this and it disenfranchises the voter is what it does. They don't care anymore.
Well, it's about getting reelected up here. At the end of the day, everybody does things, and they're afraid that if they misstep, that they will lose some votes and they'll get beat. I didn't come up here to get reelected. I came up here to do what I thought was right for the state of Alabama and the country. And it's gotten, you know, people, for today, I didn't vote for this bill. Why did I not vote for it? number one, I knew it wasn't going to pass. Number two, there's so much pork in there that it doesn't make sense to why we would put this on the backs of the American taxpayer. We continue to do it. We'll vote on it again today. Let's see if it passes. But again, the Democrats, we should have all the power up here. Okay, we have the House, we have the Senate, we have the White House. The problem is we don't stand up. And if it were me, I would say filibuster is over with. It's going to be 51 votes. And we tell the Democrats to go home because we're running this government. Right now, we're not running it. Democrats are holding our feet to the fire with 5 or 6 votes in the Senate and making us do things that they want to do. And, you know, it doesn't set well with me or the American taxpayers.
No, it doesn't. Coach, can I come see the governor's mansion when you're governor of Alabama? I've never seen a governor's mansion before.
Yeah, yeah, I'm going to invite you down. We'll set out by the pool and talk about all kind of things, politics, football, basketball, Bill Belichick, NFL, Bad Bunny, or whoever that guy is or girl that's going to sing at halftime in San Francisco. What a fitting place, right? I call it the Woke Bowl. Because that's exactly what it is. President Trump, even he's not going. I went with him last year to New Orleans, and the halftime show was, you know, for us was not real. So we left at halftime, but President Trump's not even going this year. So good luck to him. That's all I can say. I love football, but my goodness, we're trying our best to run it over a cliff like we have college football.
Well, we have. Coach, I'll see you by the pool. Appreciate you. All right. Lighten the mood. Next. It's time to lighten the mood. Monday it comes out. JesseKelly.com. Go put in your email address. We're going to send it out to you. It will not cost you a dime. We're not charging anybody for it. JesseKelly.com. And I'll give you a little hint. China is going to hate me more than they already hate me now. Go, sign up. See you then.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.